Hey folks, just a quick reminder that this episode is not meant to be used for medical advice, just good old-fashioned education. All patient information has been modified to protect their identity, and the views expressed in our podcast do not necessarily reflect the opinion of our employers.
Hi clinical problem solvers, this is Rafael Medina, a Brazilian medical student and CP Solvers team member. Knowing you're in the middle of IRS application, we're pleased to present you this episode with a mock interview. Dr. Ravi Singh, who is an associate program director, interviews me, Sukriti, and Ravi. This will be divided into two parts. On the first part, Dr. Singh interviews me and Sukriti and try to come up with our best answers. Dr. Singh also gives his input on our answers and takes questions from the audience. On the second part, Dr. Singh interviews Ravi, who gives all the answers you should definitely avoid. Hope you enjoy it. Hi, everyone. My name is Rafael, and I'm a CP Solvers team member. And moving on with our project focused on helping IMGs, international medical graduates, we're going to have a special GVMR episode today with a mock interview. So we have Dr. Ravi Singh, who is an associate program director and also an IMG, that will be interviewing us and giving us feedback in real time. We'll also be answering questions from the audience, so please feel free to comment on the chat any questions that you may have. And just for disclosure, none of the interviewees are applying this season. I'll be applying next year. Sukriti is already a PGY1, and Ravi is already an attendant. Well, now I want to ask these incredible people to introduce themselves. And why don't you go ahead first, Sukriti?
Hi, friends. I'm Sukriti. I'm a PGY1. I applied for Match last year. I finished my medical school in India, and I'm so excited to be here with Ravi and Rafa. I came all dressed up. I got my old suit. I couldn't find a white shirt, so I got whatever was close to it. And I think we learn a lot from Rafa, Ravi, and Ravi. And if you're asking why I'm doing this, I love hanging out with all of you any chance I get. And I think just beyond match applicants, I think this is being a good interviewee is such a great skill to have, even after residency, you know, when we apply for jobs. So I'm really looking forward to learning from you guys.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Ravi. I'm also one of the CP Solvers team members, and I am currently an attending in San Francisco. I did spend 2 years actually on the other side of the interview space. So I was interviewing applicants for residency here at UCSF, but also spent just as much time on your side of it, interviewing for medical school and for residency here. A little bit more about my background, though I am not technically an international medical graduate, I spent the majority of my life outside the United States. I was born in Lebanon in a small town outside the capital city, Beirut. And then I grew up in Pakistan, where my parents worked at a Lebanese international school. And so when people ask me where is home, my head spins and I have no real answer. I have many homes, including hanging out with you all here really feels like home. My job today is to really show you what not to do. And Reza just texted me, the co-founder of CP Solvers, who can't join us today, but was kind enough to wish me good luck. And I literally responded by saying, I'm very decent at making a fool of myself. And his response was, well, the only thing I have on you is I'm better at that than you. So if Reza were here, apparently he'd be more of a fool than me, but I think we're both pretty decent at it. So I hope you learn a lot from Rafa and Sukriti and learn what not to do from me. All of this, of course, is inspired by Ravi. And I want to pass the mic to Rafa to continue to coordinate the session, but wanted to also thank Ravi for, it sounds like I'm thanking myself, by the way, it's Ravi with a V, not B, who is a gem of a human being and is taking up so much of his time to give back on his journey. And I'm sure he'll tell you more about that at some point. But Rafa, the mic back to you, my friend.
Okay, so just like Ravi told us, thank you, Ravi, for taking your time and spend this incredible hour with us. So this is going to be structured in a way that Ravi will start asking me questions and then to Sukriti and then to Ravi. So let's begin.
Okay, yeah. Before we get started, I just want to say thanks for inviting me on. I think this is an incredible opportunity. You know, there's a lot of platforms that do interviews techniques and describe how to do an interview. But, you know, this is the first time we're actually doing a live session and you see you know, even though it's a mock interview, you'll start to see sweat pour down the forehead of Rafa as I increase the intensity and challenge of the questions. But it definitely is an experience, a challenging experience. But, you know, as they say, without pressure, you know, there's no diamond. So you definitely, we want to put you like Robbie mentions, the hot seat, and we see how you perform under pressure. So definitely, Rafa, Rabi, Sukruti are diamond personalities here, and I really appreciate you inviting me on today. And so this is my setup when I do interviews. We'll start in somewhere in October, November. So this is how I usually have two screens set up, and we have documents that we look through while we interview people. So we'll usually glance here and there, but we'll start with Rafa. So Rafa, good morning. How are you?
Hi, good morning. Feeling really good. A little bit anxious about it, but I'm sure this will be for the best.
That's okay. It definitely is always anxiety provoking. So tell me, where are you coming in from?
So my name is Rafael, and I'm a last year medical student from Brazil. And I've never been to the U.S., and I think this will be a great opportunity for me if I'm able to match in the USA.
Excellent. And why exactly do you want to come to the United States to train?
So when it comes to the USA, I know there are a lot of different pathways that I could go on. For example, there is this pathway of being a clinician educator, something that I'm really interested in. This is very well established in the USA. So this is something that I'm looking forward to be able to get from that country. And also there's the fact that the USA is so vast from people from all around the world. So there are different cultures, different places that I could be, I don't know, working as a human being to be better and better, get in touch with so many different people from so many different backgrounds. I think this will be great for me. And also there's the fact that I could work with the best physicians in the world, physicians that write guidelines, physicians that want me to be the best possible physician that I can be.
Now, that's great that you want to train with the best physicians. Say you don't match at your ideal program, where you won't have these superstar top physicians, how would you take that?
I would take that with grace, because I could learn from people that are not so well-known expert, but they're really just incredible. So I guess I would take that with a very grateful for the opportunity to match in such a program, no matter which program I go for.
Brilliant. Excellent. Very good. Tell me something about internal medicine that interests you. Why choose internal medicine as a residency training program and a career?
Okay, so until recently, I wanted to be a hospitalist because I couldn't pick just one specialty. I like every single one of them, of course, one more than the others. But there's the fact that until recently, I started thinking about rheumatology because I guess rheumatology are my people, because people that are from rheumatology, they are very talkative, and I'm very talkative, especially in Portuguese. And also there's the fact that you could take care of this patient for so many years. Like there's this longitudinal healthcare that we talk about so many times here in Spitzovers. For example, I'm able to diagnose a patient, and most of them, they don't have a cure. They have this autoimmune disease that they have to receive treatment for most of their lives. And just to be able to diagnose a patient and impact positively their lives is just something so incredible for me. And to be able to build this relationship with my patients, it's something that I really thrive for.
Tell me about an accomplishment that you're very or most proud of.
Okay, I guess it would be my step one, but not receiving my score. It would be the fact to be able to pay for my step one. Because this is a very expensive test, and you have to remember that you have to multiply that by 5 in order to pay for that in Brazil. And my parents, they're not in a position to help me financially to pay for those tests. My mom is a tailor. My father sells candies in the streets. And I was never in a position to ask them for money. And I had this dream since first year of medical school to go to the USA. So I started tutoring since my first year. I have so many classes that I lost count of, and I gave classes on Saturday nights, Sunday nights, and most people think that when you're a teacher, you're only working when you're giving classes, and this is not true, because you have to prepare the classes, you have to keep in mind your students' weaknesses and struggles and strengths, how to be able to make them better students, and yeah, I think when I look back to all that sacrifice, I see how much I grew as a human being. And also there is the fact that when I was able to pay for that, I don't know, this was the most incredible feeling ever. And just to do step one was actually another adventure, because with the pandemic, other parametrics are closed, most of them, and I had to go to the other side of Brazil. And I've never traveled alone by myself. I have never traveled by airplane. So a lot of new experiences, a lot of new adventures. And yeah, I think that really helped me to grow as a human being when I look back at it.
Fantastic, fantastic story. You know, a great accomplishment there that you've done. So tell me, medicine is very difficult. And a lot of times there's challenges and conflicts. How do you personally deal with conflict? Or what measures would you implement to deal with conflict and challenges?
So I'm not the type of person who's seeking definitely for problems and conflict. So if I have a problem or conflict with someone, I would actually talk with my seniors to get to know what can I do best in order to get out of that situation in a peacefully and gracefully way as much as possible.
Okay, very good. Say if you were a crayon, what color crayon would you be?
I've never thought about that question, but I guess blue. There's something about blue that I really enjoy. Not because it's Rabbi's favorite color, but it's because, I don't know, when you look at the sky and you see this beautiful blue without clouds around, and you just have this feeling of peaceful mind, you know? So I guess this would be blue.
Great, great. Excellent. Yeah, very, very good response. So tell me about a role model in your personal life during school, during your career, and why would you choose that role model?
Okay. My role model in school would be my rheumatology attending. Sometimes I think I want to be a rheumatologist because of her. She has this incredible ability of talking with patients. Like, for example, I had this patient with gout and so many distortions of his articulation. And she was like, no, I'm here for you. We're going to take care of you. We're going to make sure you have the best possible treatment ever that I could offer you. And I don't know. And she goes at the other places of the hospital. For example, there was, when I was rotating OBGYN, there was this patient with COVID and she was pregnant. And we know that pregnant people with COVID, it's something just devastating. You know, they could lose their baby. And she was there for the patient, even though it was not her patient. And just seeing how much of a human being she is towards other people really impacts me in a great, profound way.
Excellent, excellent. Very good. And last question, tell me what you like to do in your free time.
Okay, this is fun. Besides being a medical student, I'm also a translator. I translate people's fun fact from engineers. It's just I worked in a event once, and they really liked my job, and they started giving me more papers to translate, and I'm grateful for that. And also, besides being a medical student and translator, I'm also a tutor for the biggest USMLE course here in Brazil. And this is just something that I'm so proud of and so grateful for, because I can teach students from all around Brazil and get to know them and try to make them the best students that they can be. And also there is the fact that besides all of that, I play volleyball, and this is something that really helped me in medicine, because when you're playing volleyball, you have to work as a team, right? And someone has to pass the ball, someone has to set, someone has to spike the ball, and to achieve a common goal, which is win the game. So when you're in the hospital, everyone has to coordinate themselves in order to be the best group possible ever to provide the best care for the patients, you know? So this is something that really helped me. And there's the fact that I play volleyball as a setter. This is really also helped me in medicine, because when you're a setter, you have to coordinate the whole team. You have to be able to create the logistics of the game. Which block do I want to avoid? Or which spiker is the best right now in the game? So yeah, this really helped me in the leadership skills. And also, I'm also fortunate enough to be a CP Server team member and to be in a leadership position to even further progress my abilities when it comes to leadership. And yeah, so basically this is me.
Okay, we'll conclude the interview there. So job well done. How do you feel, Rafa?
Oh, I feel great because I'm surrounded by friends, but I'm sure that during my interview next year, I'm going to be a lot more anxious.
Yeah, so I guess should we stop and do some feedback or discussion about this? So, you know, the things usually they will look for definitely, you know, attitude, how you come across. Are you coming across too aggressive or too confident, or are you coming across just enough, you know, motivated, excited, but not overbearing? So you exuded enthusiasm even across the Zoom platform. Communication was great. You didn't speak, you weren't quiet, but you didn't, you know, talk too much. You didn't take over the conversation too much. You know, definitely there are a few things I would intervene and sort of we would discuss more, but sometimes we may have to actually border or wander into the more personal issues, which we don't want to definitely go into on this during this meeting. Presentation definitely was very good. Of course, you know, your appearance is going to be during the interview is going to be different, you know, suit and tie and so on. Definitely motivation and commitment to learning and medicine definitely was there, especially with the discussion of, you know, your cases and, you know, your love for rheumatology. Personal integrity, using, you know, examples of challenging situations before, relationships with other people, because, you know, when somebody wants you in a program, they want to see if you're a good fit, if you can work amongst other people, because we all work on different teams. So you have to be adaptable to the situation. Definitely you've had challenges, and, you know, everyday life is a challenge. And in internship residency, there's going to be challenges. How do you approach challenges? So, you know, there are more difficult behavioral questions, which I will actually ask Sukriti. She's already been through this process, but this is your first interview, so I didn't want to punish you, of course, right? And what I really liked, you smiled during the process, so that definitely helps. Rather than being very serious, we get people being very serious, but, you know, open up and have fun and really show them who you are. And I think that definitely will help with the selection during the process. See, they say about 90% of people, once you get to an interview, you're going to be selected, but it depends, where are you going to be selected, at the top of the pile or towards the middle? So, you know, you want them to remember you, and definitely having a memorable interview definitely helps in this process. Okay, any questions, or should we go on to Sukriti?
So are there any questions from the audience? We'll be very pleased to help you guys to answer them.
Oh, hello. I can ask one question.
Good morning, Dr. Singh. Hello, Sukriti and Ravi.
So during the interview process, I normally tend to, like, we normally tend, people tell us that be polite, casual, and just, they wanted to know you as a person. That's what mostly interview is about. While most of the people also say that it's a job interview for you. So you have to be professional, dress up, like, be everything. So what's the thin line between being as casual and being you as a person and being professional?
I think you have to sort of tread thinly between both situations. I think it depends on the person that's interviewing you. You'll have some that are very formal. You may have some older faculty. You may have some younger, and they may be, you know, maybe more relaxed. So I guess read what the person is, how the way they're interviewing you, and then respond accordingly. So don't start out being too relaxed. Yes. Definitely, you know, we also want, you know, the ideal interviewer will be one that will support you through the process and not crush you through the process. So they will help you. And especially if there's somebody who's struggling, we understand. During the first few minutes is always going to be just general questions about, hey, how are you? What's going on? Where are you coming from? Just to get you warmed up to the situation. And then we go into the more tougher questions.
Ravi, we have a question with Dimas. He asked, or she, what about the duration of each answer? How would you answer that?
So that's a great question. Yeah, it's always difficult. Be careful. You have to answer the question, but don't, you know, I tend to ramble sometimes and we go off on the tangent. Be very careful about that. So if you are unsure, maybe close up the answer at that point and wait for the interviewer to respond then. So, you know, we hate hearing crickets or silence, so we'll come up with something to ask or respond with another question. But if you think you're going off or you're not sure, or you're running out of ideas and you're not sure how to answer, maybe then just wrap it up. But don't, you know, ideally, I'd say 1 to 2 minutes, 2 minutes maybe. I've been in interviews where there's like 5 minutes of the answer, and by then the interviewer may lose interest because they have to get through a lot of different questions as well. So each interview may be 10 to 15 minutes. So you only have a certain amount of time to really make an impact. And you want to make an impact and answer as many questions as possible. Robbie, any since you've also done interviews, any suggestions you would like to comment on?
Nothing to add. I'm basking in the wisdom coming my way. This is awesome.
Okay, any other questions?
Yeah, there is. We can all agree that it was amazing, but there is anything you want him to change?
Oh, you to change?
Yeah, I guess so.
I think, you know, I don't know if you, definitely preparation is key. I think going into this, preparation and having a few words to describe. There were a few instances where you did go off a bit, and I think you can tighten up those answers. Wasn't anything wrong, but I think if you prepared, you would just, you know, hit it out of the ballpark, definitely. Like somebody mentions, some more personal aspects would be explored in a one-on-one interview. We have a room full of people, so we're not going to do a deep dive into those situations and maybe go into a few places where it really may challenge you. I do some hypothetical situations sometimes and see how you respond. But again, relax, not to crush you, but to try and to help you and see how you are in this, in answering these questions.
And Sarah asked, what would be a good answer to the question like the crayon color one?
Oh, the crayon. Yeah, that one. I love those questions because if you're not prepared, definitely prepare. It could be, we'll do a few. You know, these questions are real. These I've listened to other people. We did a session. I'm also co-chair of IMG for ACP Maryland. And we did a session on interviewing. And I got to hear from other program directors around the state, in DC, and what they ask. So they do ask these questions. So definitely going online, and I'll definitely put some resources in maybe later once we're done. I'll put in the chat. There's some resources, questions that you can prepare for, but definitely preparation is key because you really do want to make an impact. I mean, you want to give it a go. It's a very expensive process and everybody's fantastic. Everybody that's applying is qualified. It's just that last process or last piece of the puzzle where it's, where you can really make it or break it. Yeah, Catherine mentions unexpected questions scare me a bit. I think being scared is it's appropriate. I think everybody's scared. Even I'm scared sitting here, like having come in front of everybody here. Everybody's a little apprehensive. It's normal. It's normal. But I think you take that and you turn it into a positive thing, right? Here's another key, Rafa, right? Before answering questions, it's okay to pause. Maybe pause for 10, 15 seconds. Get your thoughts together and then answer. There's no shame and nobody, I kind of like that. I'm like, okay, this person really is thinking before they start answering rather than, when you just start answering spontaneously, sometimes you dig yourself into a deep situation and it's very difficult then. And then rambling occurs because just to get yourself out of it. But I think the reason why they throw these questions out there is to see if you're able to answer the question and to get an idea of how you think. They're not interested in seeing what kind of crayon or whatever. They want to see, if you can answer the question or not. It's always interesting, like listening to the answers and seeing what people are thinking.
Can I just jump in to reflect on that? There was a great article that came out in the BBC that actually studied what percentage of eye contact leads to the best conversations. And people, I think historically, were under the impression that if you look straight at somebody the whole time, that that's really good. But it turns out people are actually a little uncomfortable if you're staring at them 100% of the time. And so this idea that like you turn away, you reflect and you come back, turn away, reflect, come back, not only makes a lot of sense, I think, but it's actually been studied and reinforced scientifically. So I think that point is marvelous. So just like taking a second to like look away or to like look down or to think, to avoid, break the eye contact, go back to it, break the eye contact. It shows that you're not a rehearsed robot who's ready to deliver at a moment's notice, that you're actually thinking right there. And even if you're, even if you know the answer already, you know what to say, sometimes masquerading it as a spontaneous thought is a really good idea.
Yeah, there's also a brilliant input there, Robbie. That's really significant. I think it also helps the mannerisms and the way you act as well. And there was a memo put out by IRAS not to penalize anybody that doesn't have a good setup or video setup. There's an issue. We talk about having eye level and so on, but not everybody's able to. People are zooming in from all over the world, so we're not going to put that as a negative mark on your evaluation. You know, we just want to know how you are and how you come across. If your audio is not great, we still can figure out what you're discussing and your questions or your answers to questions. Sorry. Okay, should we go on to Sukriti now, and we'll keep taking questions? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right,
just go on,
Sukriti. So we'll try and manage this for about 10 minutes, hopefully, and then open up to questions. So, okay, Sukriti, how are you today?
Hi, Dr. Singh. I'm doing well. How are you?
Oh, I'm great. It's always a good day when I'm here interviewing people. So a great privilege. So how's your day going?
It's been going well. I really enjoyed getting to know the program and interact with the residents. So I'm looking forward to the rest of the session.
Brilliant. Excellent. Excellent. So could you tell me a little bit about yourself?
Sure. So I grew up in India, but I think if I were to really define who I am, I would use three key experiences in my life. The first would be growing up, I moved to multiple cities. And I think that this gave me the opportunity to really understand and learn about different cultures and meet lots of new people, which I think helped me become more adaptable, and I think gave me a broadened my perspective on life. The second was my experience in med school, where I discovered art and how I could use art to break down complex medical concepts, which has helped me become a better learner. And I think the third is that I'm an eternal optimist. And when I'm in a difficult situation, I always look at it as an opportunity of how I could turn this around. And I think if I were to really to put all my experiences in a bubble, this is what I would summarize it as.
Excellent. Very good. What kind of art do you like?
I use a lot of media. I like both traditional media using paint, and I also like digital media. I like exploring. So that's something I've enjoyed, exploring different media to cartoon.
Excellent. So if you could be a piece of art, what kind of art would you be? Modern, contemporary, anime, like cartoon, or any of the different kind of art that we have?
Mm-hmm. I think I would like to be modern art, because what I love about modern art is it can be interpreted in so many different ways, and I think everybody's interpretation of art it helps them connect with themselves and kind of weaves into everybody's story, versus more traditional art, which is less dynamic and more static in that it tells only one person's story. So I think if I could be a piece of art, I would be modern art.
Excellent. So, and great answer there. And what kind of instrument in art would you want to be? Would you want to be a paintbrush? Would you want to be a crayon? Would you want to be charcoal? Would you want to be pencil?
I think I would like to be a pencil because I think I draw many parallels from life and art, and life is so transient. And although all of us in life are trying to find a deeper meaning of our existence, and we all want to leave footprints in the sands of time, I think our impact is as short or as long as the people that we impact. And I think a pencil too, it makes an impact, but it can always be erased. And I think that really describes the beauty of it and the beauty of life in itself.
Excellent. Great. Tell me about your strengths. What would you say is a strength of yours?
I think my greatest strengths are I have a really good work ethic. I am empathetic, and I have a growth mindset. So I like to continuously improve on what I'm doing.
Excellent. And now how about weaknesses?
I think I'm overly critical of myself, and I can lack confidence occasionally to voice my opinion. These are some things I'm working on. And I also think I'm a little short, and I would like to be taller.
Tell me about a recent case that you experienced, something that you recently encountered in school or on the floors in your rotations.
So I remember a case of an elderly lady who came to us with an altered mental status. Her past medical history was notable for a liver transplant recently, and she was on immunosuppressants for it. And what was really intriguing in this case was that with the altered mental status, it has a wide differential, but the fact that she had had a liver transplant recently acted as a confounding factor in that we were thinking the three main things we were considering was, given her immunocompromised state, was this an infection? Were the medications that she was using, she was on tacrolimus, was this causing the altered mental status, or was this a part of the liver transplant in itself, that she was in acute rejection and this was causing her altered mental status? And on physical exam, we found that she had tremors, dysarthria, spasticity, and hyporeflexia. And this really confused us because it was hard to localize where the pathology was. She had such a diffuse set of symptoms and signs. And so on the top of our differential was infections and a metabolic cause of her altered mental status, because this was something that could cause symptoms and signs all over the body. So we got an infectious panel on her, and which was negative. And so we thought about what are the metabolic causes that can cause altered mental status. And lo and behold, we got a metabolic panel, and we also went and revisited some of her history, and we found that she had had a low sodium of 120. And when we did this, when we scanned her head, we found that she had hyperintensity in her pons and throughout her central nervous system. And I think what I really learned from this case was, while reading in medical school and the textbooks, we see osmotic demyelination syndrome as being localized to the pons and having a very typical presentation. Whilst here she came, the demyelination had extended beyond, the pathology had extended beyond the pons. The other thing that I learned was that osmotic demyelination syndrome can present after 7 to 14 days. And this was something I hadn't thought about. So this was something I learned in the case.
Fantastic. Very good. Tell me about a stressful situation that you may have encountered in school, and how did you approach that?
I think a stressful situation, I was working with one of my colleagues who was fantastic. He had a great depth and breadth of medical knowledge, but he tended to be dismissive while taking a patient's history sometimes. And so this resulted in us not getting all the information that we needed. And so I gave him some feedback on it, but I think he didn't accept my feedback because he felt like I was undermining him. And this kind of led to a conflict between us. And so I had to take steps to because we were working so closely together to resolve this. And so what I did immediately was to take a step back and to not get emotional about his response to my feedback and not take it personally. The other was to give him really concrete data points that he was in terms of instances where this had happened before, so that he could, so that I wasn't just voicing my opinion, but also giving him, you know, objective data. And the third thing that I did was I asked him if we could have a trusted colleague of ours observe our encounter and give us feedback. And I think this led to a great resolution because we were able to get feedback. And also he felt like I was a good colleague to him by pointing out something that he could improve on. And this led to a better relationship for us.
Great answer there, and great way of dealing with that situation. If we'll try a hypothetical situation. So I'm your patient and you are on rounds and I want you to try and update me. I have a diagnosis of infective on endocarditis. You are going to do blood cultures, get a 2D echo, CBC chem, antibiotics, and an ID consult. How would you discuss that with me?
Sure. So if you were the patient, Mr. Singh, hi, Mr. Singh, how are you doing today?
I'm great. Are you my doctor?
Yes, I'm Dr. Banthia. I'm working under my supervising attending. We're taking care of you today. I've just come here to convey some of the results that we got back from your blood tests. Would this be a good time to talk?
Oh, definitely, definitely. I'd appreciate an update on my situation.
Sure. So our tests show that you have something called infective endocarditis. And I know these are big words, but what it essentially means is that there are valves in your heart. So your heart contains valves, and there are four chambers with valves that help circulate the blood all around your body. When these valves get infected, they can cause chest pain, and they can also impair circulation in the body, as well as lead to formation of small clots, and these can cause strokes and other symptoms. So we are concerned about your infective endocarditis because it can potentially lead to a more complicated course in the hospital. But we're happy that we caught this early. We're going to get some more tests. We're going to get an ultrasound of your heart. We're also going to give you some antibiotics that will act on the infection and help make that better. Do you have any questions or concerns?
No, I don't. That was great. Thank you. Thank you. All right, good. Say if you were an animal, what animal would you be?
I think I'd like to be a cat because I like the discordance in their personalities in that we see them as these very independent creatures. They're often portrayed to like to live on their own, and being part of the cat family means you could be somebody like a lion who lives in a forest, or somebody like a domestic cat who lives at home, the furry friend to his human. And so I love the discordance in that they're such independent creatures, but also such affectionate creatures that can be a great support to other people. And so in my medical career, both while training, this is what I'd like to do, is to strive towards, I think, learning independently, but also, you know, being a comfort to my patients.
Excellent, excellent. Are there any cat stories or poems about cats that are one of your favorites?
I really like Phoebe from Friends, her version of Smelly Cat. I think
that's a good. That's a great answer. I like that. Yeah, one of mine is Bacavity, the mystery cat. So one of my favorite poems. So, but I remember that one. Yeah, great. Okay, I'm going to put you through another hypothetical situation. So imagine I'm your resident and I inappropriately criticize you in front of the team about not ordering a test or forgetting to order a test for one of your patients. How would you handle a resident that is harshly critical and maybe having some bias against you?
I think in that moment, I feel like if I did do the mistake that I was being, that the resident was pointing out, I think I would take it in my stride. And if I felt like he was being too personal or biased, then I would remove ourselves from the situation that we were in. I would take, maybe go to a place where we were more comfortable, where there were not other people. And then I would communicate what my concerns were or how I felt. I think the key thing here would be to diffuse the situation by going to a place where we were more comfortable and we could talk more openly.
Excellent. That's a great way of dealing with it. And I'll make this a last question. Say you failed or say you have a low score on your step one and I ask you, why did you get a low score on step one? And is this going to hinder your performance as an intern in our program? How would you answer that question?
So after I did get my low score on my step, I went back to really dig why I had scored the way I did and what were the things that I needed to work on. And I think even if I were to work in a residency program, the thing that I would bring to the program would be that if I were to make a mistake, I would try to go back and to find out why I made the mistake and to work on it. And I think as humans, we're infallible. And the key thing is to keep working on the things that we're not good at. And I think that's what helps us learn. And as a resident, I think I would continue to want to learn, to be curious to learn, and to work on the things that I'm not good at.
Excellent. We'll conclude the interview there. How do you feel?
I was really nervous.
I think some of those questions were definitely stress-inducing. And I just picked you for those because you've been through this already. You've been through the rigors. Some of them were hypothetical. Of course, during interviews, we look at CVs and we do pick apart, look at any issues or inconsistencies. But I just threw all these different hypothetical questions to her, which would possibly be one third of the interview. Of course, we'll go through your CV, what rotations, U.S. clinical experience, and so on. Definitely would be described. Just the last question I like. If for an unfortunate reason you have a low score, they definitely will ask that. So be prepared. And you want to make it that you're not going to lament about, oh, I had a bad day. It was, I didn't do well and so on. Look, they want to see, we've had people with low scores turn that negativity into positivity. So how motivated, how driven you are, how you're going to resurrect from this this low score, resurrect yourself and do well and have that drive and motivation to improve. So what kind of things you're going to implement to try and improve and make yourself a successful candidate. So turning that negativity into positivity, definitely they want to look for on an interview. Any questions from anybody?
I guess I would want to challenge that that last point, because it's one day, it's one specific exam. You only really have that one chance if you pass that exam, even if you get a low score, but still a passing score. And explaining that, hey, if you were dealing with, you know, something traumatic, having the program know that that was something that affected your score and that, look, I got through it on my, you know, on my subsequent exams, I did well. Or if you are, or if you're a not that great of a test taker, and I guess, this is something that's sort of selected out when it comes to IMGs, considering that STEP is basically the great equalizer, if you will. But saying that, hey, look, I know I don't necessarily do well on standardized testing, but this is what I've done to try and improve. That's something that will be appreciated. And STEP is only one part of your application. Your clinical experiences and your research, your other experiences will all be part of it, and will all be things to look at. And there's a reason why step one is now going pass fail. So likely step two is going to be the new try to get as high a score as possible on this test in order for it to be to basically be the great equalizer. But yeah, don't let a low step score be a deterrent, but also if something traumatic happened and that affected your performance on step one, and you probably would have scored better if that thing hadn't happened, explain it.
Great input there, Dhruv. Thanks for sharing that. He's absolutely right. Definitely, yes, there can be a situation, explain it, but then also explain, because I think they like to ask, and again, it's a very uncomfortable situation and they want to see what will you do about it. But, you know, what I've sort of gleaned from other PDs, and there's some things that they may have more experience in interviewing over many more years than I do. But what they've mentioned is, yes, you can have a bad day, you can explain it, but you know what? Life goes on, and what are you going to do about it? So if you do explain, like, you know, your rebuttal is, but look, I'm doing this, I'm doing that, I'm doing all these other activities, you can more than make up for it. But yeah, you're not just the score, but unfortunately it's what we have. And like Dhruv mentioned, step two now will be more looked at, and then step three, and then other, I know maybe other disciplines will have, I know anesthesia will actually have their own sort of examination that they may implement, or neurology or something else that they may have in lieu of step one. But don't get shaken by that, you know, wear it with, you know, like as a badge of honor that you've done that, you've tried, something happened, but you know what? It's not going to, you know, affect your, if you're at an interview, and I've had many interns, residents that have had low scores, but you know what? They've worked hard and they've done as well as people with high scores. And, you know, it doesn't negatively impact them down the road. Once you're in residency, you know, those scores don't matter as much. Now it's just looking forward, getting through those 3 years. Any other questions? I guess we have Robbie now next. Should we?
Catherine raised her hand.
Sure.
Okay. So again, about those unexpected questions, right? Like color of pencil, or like what animal? I've heard about like what song would you be? And some of them are easier, but some of them are like super hard. Not hard, but I mean it you have to think. And I feel like those are the types of questions that I would have a hard time answering like right away, and then like hours later during the shower I will probably come up with a good answer, and I would be like, oh, I should have answered that. And I know they're unexpected, so there's not a way to prepare for them, but do you have any tips? Because I know I feel like the behavioral questions, we have like lists of it. And usually even if they're not the same, you can always like tailor the same answer for different questions. But those questions like music, color, or like what kind of art, they're hard. Like you have to just think right away. And they are the type of questions that usually I feel like they will make you maybe stand out. It's like your chance to stand out of the crowd. So do you have any tips for that? Like any, I don't know, how to prepare for the unexpected, maybe? I don't know.
Sometimes you have to be spontaneous with this. But again, take those 5-10 seconds, look away, like Robbie mentioned, and think about it. Because a lot of times we don't look. If you choose red, if you chose red, that doesn't mean you're an angry person, but we're not interested. Like red is not a color that is like a red flag, you know. Don't choose this person because red can be angry and hot and so on and bothered. But they really want to see how you react to those unexpected questions. You know, you're put in a stressful situation. Can you come up with a logical and reasonable answer to that question? And that's how life is. You know, are you going to be a good fit for the program? Can you react under duress? So you can be, if you're overprepared, I think that can also put you in a bad situation as well. Being too overprepared, and that will make you more confused as well. You'll have just too much in your mind that you just want to get out, and you'll be pressured to just try and explain everything that you've prepared for. But having an appropriate amount of preparation definitely will help. But if you take one of those questions and you say what color or what animal, I think you'll be fine with all the other ones. And I'm sure there's other questions I haven't thought of. There's people that have lists of questions they kind of hoard and they don't want to share with anyone.
Okay, thank you.
I'll just share a quick reflection to that, Catherine. I think it's a great question. And I think if I were on the other end of the table for anybody who I'm asking a surprise question, I think what people are really looking for a little bit of authenticity, because it is a way of me guaranteeing that I will actually see the real you as opposed to a prepared version of you. And since this is a match process, people really want at least glimmers of the person you are. So I think people are less attached to the quality of your answer, but rather how authentic it feels. And so I think for me, if I'm in the worst case scenario is you're like, oh my gosh, I have no answer. I would want you in that situation to be like, you know, Robbie, it's incredible. I prepared so much for this interview, but when you're asking me this spontaneous question, my mind is tumbled, and I came to no conclusion. And it happened to me so much when I was preparing for these questions. Sometimes hours later in the shower, I would stand there and be like, oh my God, that's the perfect answer. But you know, today it's just not happening. And that it may be the most intriguing and riveting answer of all, rather than coming up with a concoction that sounds like, oh, you know, my favorite color is blue because Sukriti on the clinical problem solver said it's her favorite color. So it's my favorite color. And, you know, so like, just be you. And I think that's the secret to success in those instances. Literally, the interview is asking you what happens to your mind right away when I say this.
Yeah, that's a great thought, Robbie. It reminds me of that comment, prepare to be unprepared. It's going to happen. But just mentally go in with it that you're going to be unprepared. And you know what? You'll be surprised. I've been, you know, it's like my first few lectures, I was so overprepared. I was so nervous. I was like, I'm not going to remember everything. I'm not going to remember this mechanism. But you know what? When I went in, all the stuff I prepared for didn't come up. What came up was all the stuff I just, you know, spontaneously came up with what I'd learned maybe years ago. So it's amazing how much you can come up with.
Thank you, Dr. Singh, Sukriti, and Rafa for doing this. My question is about the tell me about yourself question, the elevator pitch, essentially. And the sub-questions to that are, would you, as an APD, want to know more? And I'm applying to neurology, so would you want to know my interest in medicine or like just medicine in general, why I wanted to be a doctor? Or should I directly just dive into why neurology, number one? And the second thing was, would you like me to say a line or two about my hobbies? I think those are the main points. That's it. Thank you.
That's a great question there. Yeah, it's one of those things, those questions I talked about, conversation starter. So there's always these preliminary set of questions that they'll ask at the beginning of the interview. Tell me about yourself. Where are you coming from? How's your day going? And so on. And, you know, sometimes it gives us a blueprint for how the conversation is going to flow. So I don't know if you recognize when Sukriti talked about art. Now, she had a great answer. It was like a three-pronged sort of approach to telling her about herself. And the last part really caught my eye. We didn't prepare for this art answer that you had, right, Sukriti? And then what happened was I took that and I started asking about what kind of instrument would you like to be? What kind of painting you like to be? And it was a very fun conversation. You know, you want to have fun as well. And the person on the other side should also be receptive to that fun and engaging conversation. You also don't want to be with an interview that's sort of very cold and too maybe aggressive in their questioning as well, and not responsive to what you're saying. You know, at the end of each answer, I was complimenting them. I like to compliment each interviewee about their response and what they've said and value what they're telling me. So, and what I like is what people like is stories, right? Especially like when you discuss cases or situations, stories are a great way of getting that, getting your point across. You know, we want to know your story, like Rafa's story about his parents and overcoming adversities in life to getting where he is. That's a great story. That would stay with me. So what happens after interviews? Everybody gets together, discusses the applicants. And you know what? These stories come up. I had, for instance, a letter of recommendation from somebody, and this still sticks out to me. The person wrote that this is the kind of person that you would want as your son-in-law. And I thought that was hilarious. But you know what? It stuck with me. And that was an interesting that you don't read that on a letter of recommendation usually. But I hope that answers your question.
Thank you. That's a wrap, folks.